Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking a little bit more about Tesla's earnings report yesterday and the reaction that we have seen today. We'll also talk about an 8K filing that we didn't talk about yesterday, an update on the Tesla Semi, new comments on a possible factory in Mexico, and an update from Toyota. All right, looking at the stock, Tesla today following the earnings report yesterday, finishing up 11% on the day, closing at $160.27. It feels like it's been forever since we have had a positive reaction to an earnings report. So really nice to see that. The NASDAQ playing nicely with that today, finishing up 1.75%. This was another really high volume day for Tesla, even before after hours wrapping up, 233 million shares traded. So that's going to make it the highest volume day for Tesla in over a year. We've seen relatively similar levels of volume during some of those high volume days that we've had over the last couple of months, but this surpasses them slightly, which is great to see on such a strong day. And I think it's also very important to note that this share price, $160 per share, this is above the share price that Elon Musk last sold shares at. Those shares dipped in the $157 range back in mid-December. So Tesla's share price has not reached those levels since that share sale was disclosed. So I think you could reasonably interpret this as a full recovery from that round of selling. Obviously, I've talked many times about how I think other things are the primary drivers of the share price movement, but certainly those shares being added to the market does not help. So it's really nice to see that recovery. And I think probably even more important in this case, because there have been questions about whether or not if Elon sold in mid-December and then the stock dropped and then Q4 earnings were bad, if he would be hit with some insider trading claims on that sale. So a really strong day immediately after the Q4 earnings were reported, and then also that strong day returning it to the level that Elon was selling at, it would seem to make claims like that a lot harder to justify. Not that I don't put it past anyone to make those claims still, but I think it makes the case more difficult. So I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see the reaction in general. I think it speaks to how negative expectations and sentiment had been. Despite what seemed like a top line and bottom line beat, this was not a financial report that blew away all expectations by any means. We've certainly seen better reports from Tesla that have earned different reactions, but I think Tesla did a pretty good job on the call, just putting some major concerns to ease, particularly talking about order rates, giving some more guidance than Tesla normally would on things like margins. And I think doing a pretty good job to cautiously build some excitement around what is next for Tesla, and importantly, not entirely pinning the success of those things to FSD. So I think a large part of the move today is a response to the settling of some fears, some concerns that have really taken hold as the share price has declined. Now, some of those concerns have had varying degrees of validity, particularly around margins, which have seen significant declines. But as we have talked about, hopefully now we have digested that, reset, and can really start to build off of a new base. And I think that's what we have seen since the price cuts. So nice reaction in the market. Analyst reaction seems to be majority positive. We've got buy ratings reiterated from Goldman Sachs, from Piper Sandler. Alex Potter titled his note, "After Q4 results, we still have zero hesitation. Investors should own Tesla." No changes in price targets from those two as of yet, but we did have some slight price target increases from a handful of analysts. Dan Ives of Wedbush increasing from 175 to 200, Cohen increasing from 122 to 140, Wells Fargo increasing from 130 to 150, I think Bank of America increased as well. So again, while automotive gross margin ex credits ex deferred revenue came in below analyst consensus expectations, seems like the consensus reaction relatively strong. All right, let's move on to a couple other takeaways from earnings. First, I just want to put a clean set of numbers on screen, as of course yesterday, as I noted during the live stream, I did end up putting in the incorrect automotive cost number. We did eventually get that figured out later on in the stream, but just wanted to put the clean numbers up here and also note, in case you hadn't seen the correction video that I posted later last night, during the stream, I thought that that cost difference was because of some recognition of FSD revenue, but actually what happened is that the cost that I put in just didn't include automotive leasing. So hopefully that clears up some of those comments. My apologies on that. Once I figured that out, I also wanted to see how the numbers were looking without that deferred FSD beta revenue recognition. So that was that correction video, but I'll put those numbers up here as well. And I got a lot of questions about, hey, why are you backing out FSD revenue recognition? FSD is a part of the business. It should be recognized. For sure, it definitely should. FSD is an important part of the margin structure. So I'm not trying to exclude that. And actually, I'm not excluding that here. I'm only excluding deferred revenue. So this is years of FSD revenue that is being recognized in this single quarter, which is obviously something that you can't just continue to do every single quarter going forward. So it's worth looking at how the business looks without it. If you want to include it, that's fine. It's there. We already have those numbers, but it is absolutely worth looking at how things look without it. Now, that doesn't mean that this revenue shouldn't be included in the financials at all. It should be. It should just be spread out among those historical quarters rather than bunched up all here in a single quarter. So we just remove it. That helps normalize with the prior quarters. If you want to keep like 15% of that and redistribute it among all the other quarters, that's fine. There are tons of different ways to slice and dice financials, plenty of rabbit holes to go down there, especially when you start talking about things like foreign exchange. But this is one important way to look at it. As we talk about going into the earnings report every quarter, the important part of these earnings isn't so much the number at the end of the day, it's the understanding that we gain from the business. So looking at the business without things like regulatory credits, without things like deferred FSD revenue, it gives us a cleaner picture to grow our understanding. Doesn't mean those things don't have value or that we shouldn't be modeling for them, we absolutely should and do, but if we don't look at the business without those things, then it can really muddy up our understanding. And as I mentioned, this isn't excluding the impact of FSD in its entirety, just the deferred revenue portion. So even excluding that deferred revenue portion, there's still an impact of FSD sales that happen in this quarter, and that's benefiting the margin even in this adjusted number scenario. I think the last question that I got on that was, hey, Tesla said that they're still going to recognize like $1 billion more of deferred revenue, so why would we exclude it if they're just going to keep recognizing deferred revenue? Yes, they may continue to do that throughout this year. It's still deferred revenue. We still need to understand where things are without it. And there's no guarantee of that being recognized. Tesla consistently, historically, has not recognized as much deferred revenue for FSD as they have expected at the times that they made those disclosures. So maybe it happens, but there's no guarantee of that. So best to understand how the business looks without the impact of that deferred portion of revenue. All right, so apologies for that detour if you're already on board with that line of thought, but I just got so many of the exact same question on that video yesterday that I wanted to elaborate on it. Let's move on from that. A couple other things that I wanted to touch on from the earnings call transcript. I think one of the most important points of the call, at least in terms of the near-term reaction, was Zach's comment on margins. He was asked the questions about if average selling prices would decline below 47,000 or if gross margins ex credits would decline below 20%. Zach noted that, quote, there is certainly a lot of uncertainty about how the year will unfold, but I'll share what's in our current forecast for the moment. So based upon these metrics here, we believe that we'll be above both of the metrics that are stated in the question. So 20% automotive gross margin, excluding leases and credits, and then $47,000 average selling price across all models, end quote. So I think listening to this yesterday, my initial reaction was to take that as a statement that the margins would not dip below that level or the average selling prices would not dip below that level. But I'm not sure that that is the correct interpretation. That's not stated explicitly. The question doesn't assign a time frame, and Zach doesn't specifically state one at all either, but he does start off the response by saying that there's uncertainty about how the year will unfold and then talks about those metrics. So I'd like to interpret this as Zach saying, hey, even after these price cuts, we don't expect automotive gross margins to come in below 20%, which would imply that each quarterly number comes in higher than that. He could also still be talking about the year in total. I hope that's not the case, but in terms of what was explicitly said, that could still be a reasonable interpretation. So I don't think this is any guarantee that we don't see automotive gross margins excluding credits below 20% in the first quarter. Again, I hope not, but I'm not sure that we can take that as that specific of guidance. All right, next I wanted to look a little bit closer at Zach's comment on insurance. He noted that they are currently at a $300 million annual premium run rate as of the end of the fourth quarter. This is really the first financial information that we've got from Tesla on Tesla insurance, so very exciting to look at. So Zach is mentioning an annualized run rate. That means the quarterly revenue, it's going to be a fourth of that, even a little bit less because, of course, you're growing throughout the quarter. So your rate at the end of the quarter is going to be higher than the beginning. And as for that growth rate, Zach also mentioned that it's been growing 20% quarter over quarter, so faster than the vehicle business. So if that kind of a rate continues, it's a big if, but if that kind of a rate continues, that gives us a really good idea of where the insurance business will go. At that growth rate, that would put Tesla Insurance above a $1 billion annualized run rate in about 18 months. Still would be a small portion of Tesla's business, less than 1% of revenue likely at that time. And we don't have any visibility into Tesla's margins here yet. They're not building this to be a profit center like Elon talked about yesterday. It's really to help keep cost of ownership low. But any profit that Tesla does generate here is going to have next to zero marginal operational costs. So even at a relatively low margin, any profit from this business can pretty quickly flow right through to operating income, which is really nice. The other end of that equation is that if Tesla chooses to, that can allow them to keep prices really low. All right, last thing for today I want to touch on from the earnings report. Certainly not an exhaustive list here, but one thing that I did want to highlight again was Tesla's comment about Giga Shanghai. They say that since our Shanghai factory has been successfully running near full capacity for several months, we do not expect meaningful sequential volume increases in the near term. So I noted this yesterday, but I think this kind of encapsulates where we're at right now, sort of the agenda for 2023. Obviously, Tesla is still going to be as aggressive as possible in terms of their long-term growth plans. And of course, Texas and Berlin, those are going to continue to ramp up, and that's going to be significant. But Tesla here basically saying, hey, don't expect any major increases from where Giga Shanghai is at today. Now, that's a change for Giga Shanghai. Every single year, we have had huge increases in productivity from that factory. Obviously, that's been the big driver of growth for the last couple of years. Now, the way that Tesla writes this, it very much sounds like it's time for, at least for the time being, Shanghai to hand off that growth baton to Giga Berlin and Giga Texas. Why not keep growing Shanghai at the same time? Is Tesla really constrained where they can't continue to increase the output there? Maybe. I don't really think that's what's happening, though. I think right now we're at a period of time where we're going into what Elon views as a recession, and certainly automotive demand has declined. And I think rather than go all out on increasing Model 3 or Model Y production even further, particularly at Shanghai, where I do think that they would have that option if they so chose, Tesla, I think with the acknowledgement here, is basically saying, hey, 2023, let's focus on efficiency, particularly in Shanghai, bring costs down on the current production base. I think we've already seen that with some shift reductions at Shanghai, and then really put all efforts company-wide, worldwide, on laying the groundwork for the next generation of products. Now, obviously, Tesla has started some of that already. They're going to continue to increase Model Y production at Berlin and Texas, but I'm just saying that's sort of the vibe that I get right now, and this is not unusual in Tesla's history. This isn't just a smooth 50% every year. In hindsight, it kind of ends up looking like that, but that rate historically even has ebbed and flowed in correspondence with Tesla's launch of new products. I mean, look back at the time period from 2016 to 2018. 2016, Tesla grew deliveries by just over 50%. 2017, that growth rate declined to 35%, but that's because Tesla was preparing for the Model 3. If you're sitting there and you're looking at that and you see declining growth, oh no, that's a red flag. But then rebounding in 2018, once the Model 3 was launched, all of a sudden that growth rate jumps back over 100%, I think the best in 5 years for Tesla. So I'm not saying that's exactly what's going to happen in future years from here. Obviously, Tesla's got a higher base right now, so growth rates like that are becoming more difficult, but not every year is just smooth sailing, and a decline in the growth rate doesn't mean that the growth rate can't return to be higher again. Now, Tesla is still guiding for very strong growth. Of course, if we annualize Q4, the growth doesn't look as strong, and there are some things in the 2022 numbers suppressing that base. So again, this isn't going to be an exact resemblance to anything historical, but that's just kind of the feeling that I'm getting from Tesla. And the good thing is that they are extremely excited about what that next generation is. They just haven't told us much about it yet. So hopefully this year we find out more. All right, let's move on from earnings. Tesla yesterday also published an SEC filing in 8K disclosing that they have entered into a credit agreement with Citibank for a revolving credit facility of up to $5 billion with the option to increase that by an additional $2 billion. They say that as of yesterday, no loans were outstanding on this credit facility. So pretty quick and easy on this one. This basically is just a line of credit for Tesla that they can draw on if they want to. That can make things easier from a working capital perspective. Looks like with the higher interest rates, Tesla is investing some of their cash, and some of that stuff may not be 100% liquid. So for short-term capital needs, it might make more sense to just draw from a line of credit. You can keep that cash then a little bit more invested in aggregate and earn more interest. So we talked about that yesterday. That is actually starting to become a nice little bonus for Tesla each quarter. And I think this should help that continue and also just provide a nice little line of credit if Tesla needs it for some other reason. All right, next we've got an article from Motor Trend on the Tesla Semi. Some really good photos and things in here, some impressions, and some interesting statistics, I guess, on charging and on battery size. So we've actually talked about this before, where Pepsi made some statements about the mega charger rates. Didn't really seem to work out with the math or match Tesla's comments, so I was a little bit surprised by that. Same thing in this article again, for some reason. This article says that the Tesla Semi drivers at PepsiCo said that the Tesla Semi has a 1,000 kilowatt hour battery. That would be more than the math that we had previously done suggested. Then the article also goes on to say that the Semi chargers there are charging at 750 kilowatts and that the Semi recharges to 70% from 0% in half an hour. Now, these combination of things cannot work together. One of these things has to be wrong. It's weird that Motor Trend wouldn't like double check on these things. It's not the hardest math to do. If the pack is 1,000 kilowatt hours and it charges from 0% to 70%, which would be 700 kilowatt hours in half an hour, well, then it would have to be charging at 1,400 kilowatts or 1.4 megawatts to complete that. If it was 750 kilowatts, it's only going to get 375 kilowatt hours, which is pretty obviously not 70% of those packs. So weird stuff. I don't know why we keep seeing the same information that is not correct, but again, some good photos and other impressions. So I will link to that article down in the description if you do want to check that out. All right, last couple of things. We've got an update on a possible Mexico factory today. Nikkei Asia reporting that they have been told by the Secretary of Economic Development for Nuevo León that they have not yet reached an agreement with Tesla on a possible factory and that he does not know whether a decision will be made this year. So although there have been a lot of signs pointing to this as a possibility, looks like it is still kind of up in the air. And sounds like all of those signs that we had seen that said, welcome Tesla, welcome Elon Musk to Nuevo León, were of a rather unofficial nature. Finally then, some news on Toyota. Their CEO and president, Akio Toyoda, is going to step down from the CEO position on April 1st. However, he will assume the responsibility of chairman of the board. He'll be replaced in the CEO position by their current chief branding officer. So we'll see if this brings any changes to Toyota's interesting EV strategies. All right, that'll wrap it up for today, but quick note for tomorrow. I may not have an episode. I do have to do some traveling, so we'll kind of see what the news flow is like. If it's required, hopefully can make one happen, but if it ends up being a quiet day, perhaps not. So we'll see on that, but otherwise, thanks for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. We'll either see you tomorrow or on Monday for the next episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.